spirit on that. Do you find this new lectionary year a bit jarring? I do. Up till the beginning of Advent, just after Thanksgiving, our gospel readings were mostly from St. Luke. But now we're reading St. Matthew's gospel, and it's very, very different. If you're like me, you've got in your head an idea of the events leading up to the birth of Jesus. It starts with the angel Gabriel appearing to Mary, and goes through the three kings visiting Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, and then they have to escape to Egypt because King Herod is trying to have Jesus killed. But that's not really quite how it goes. This is what I refer to as the Christmas pageant version. When one's casting a Christmas pageant, especially if there's lots of kids, one wants as many roles as possible. So we take the angel Gabriel, and Joseph's dream, and shepherds and angels, and King Herod and three kings, the flight to Egypt, and we create a St. Luke, St. Mark, or St. Matthew mashup. Maybe we throw in the beginning of John's Gospel as a prologue, in the beginning was the Word. St. Luke and St. Matthew are the only two Gospels that have anything at all to say about the details of Jesus' birth and early life. But Luke focuses the story on the women, Mary and Elizabeth, and on shepherds and angels. The whole story takes place in an obscure place out in the hill country, and the government doesn't know anything at all about it. St. Matthew, which we're reading this year, reads more like an espionage story. The men are front and center, Joseph and Herod. The women don't even speak. And the government, Herod's government, is watching this potential threat. Foreign dignitaries from the East are involved, and there's a thrilling escape to Egypt. And there's a lot of other differences in the two accounts. But this morning, I want us to take a look at how Matthew plays off John the Baptist and Jesus. Today's reading is from the 11th chapter. John was introduced back in the third chapter, and he made some enemies and baptized Jesus. And then in the fourth chapter, he was arrested. So at the beginning of today's reading, Jesus has been teaching and preaching and healing for some time. And John has just sort of been kind of looming in the background, stuck off in jail. Now, as we heard last week, John was very much cut from the same cloth as prophets, like Ezekiel. He looked like a prophet, and he talked like a prophet. And John probably had a pretty good idea in his head of what a Messiah should look like and sound like. And Jesus didn't look or sound anything like that. He wasn't a great military leader who would help the Jews rise up and throw off their Roman persecutors. He preached kind of awkwardly. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek. I suspect John had a belly full of meek, judging by the way he told off the Pharisees and Sadducees, those religious authorities. But John was the forerunner. He was sent to prepare the way. So he asks the important question, sending word from prison. Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? And Jesus is kind of cagey. He doesn't answer directly. He says, go tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. In other words, see for yourself. The question is implied, given this evidence, what do you think? By the way, the continued extreme conflict between John the Baptist and King Herod is unique to Matthew's gospel. Unlike the other gospels, in Matthew, that dislike is personal. Prophetic power in John and in Jesus is repeatedly set against Herod's fear of a rival king. And as Matthew tells it, John is eventually executed and his head displayed on a platter. And John had to have known what was likely to happen. He had ticked off some really important people. And maybe John sent that question, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" Because in prison he had a lot of time to think, time to doubt, time to wonder if what he had given his life to was real or worth it. Now often people have a wonderful sense of God's presence at joyful times. The birth of a child, Christmas, dinner with family and friends. But in those times where things are not so good, when things are difficult, when one's dealing with a serious illness or the death of a loved one or other losses, then it can be really hard to find God, to feel God's presence. One may even wonder, is there really a God? And if so, does God really care about people? Care about me? Like John, we might ask, are you the one? Even John the Baptist has his doubts. But sometimes we think doubt is a bad thing, but it's somehow the opposite of faith. But the opposite of faith isn't doubt, it's certainty. Because if we know something for certain, what do we need faith for? And our doubts, we might think, well, you know, if I just read the Bible more or knew more theology, then it would be easier. Now, reading the Bible and studying theology are good and helpful things. But actually, prayer, conversation, asking the questions directly are key. Relationships are hard to maintain when you don't ever talk with the other person. What's key is bringing questions, like John the Baptist's question, to one who can answer it. And especially in the season of Advent, of preparation for Christmas, the feast of God with us, it's the vocation of every Christian, individually and corporately, to explore John's question. Are you the one?